not test or try man. Man's problems, man's trials, human trials and problems do not come from God. They come from within humanity itself, and humanity tests and tries itself with its own. And the word is thumoi, lusts, is translated, but it means with your own heat, your own passions, your own desires, and so on. And has to do that in order to progress. It has to do that in order to get through things. The suffering that we experience is suffering that we choose to go through, in a sense. The suffering that we experience in any condition is suffering that we ourselves cause ourselves to experience on the primary face of it. If I were to give you an example of a man in a room, in a cell, he's locked in, doesn't know what's going on in the outer world, and someone comes and yells through his door, "Your wife just died in an automobile accident." And he would go through all kinds of agony and grief, but maybe his wife didn't just die at all, maybe that's a lie. But he would go through all the pain and the grief of it in his conscious mind. And if the same man were told the same thing in the cell and he had no knowledge of it in another way, he might choose to act in a very different way. He might question whether this were really true, and he might go deeply with himself and feel to see, is my wife really harmed? Do I feel my wife is in a situation of harm? And ask himself, and he might be clear enough to actually find out for himself, no, she's okay. And that's the difference between how we test and try ourselves. It's a matter of how we react, and how we react to the outer world. And all the great philosophies that have taught people about how to be and how to act and how to react in the world have always stressed the importance of being slow to anger, of not jumping into quick decisions, all this kind of stuff. All the wisdom we have in the world tells us these things, but very few people act with this kind of wisdom. But as they get so they can start to act and react so that they're not knocked off balance by every wind that blows, and as they get so they can be really in center, and when you're walking down a dark alley and you suddenly hear from some dog that you don't immediately crap your pants and start running, but you turn around and you start dealing with the animal in a way that you can deal with the animal. This is when people begin to master themselves and their environments. And before they can do that, they have to first master themselves, which means mastering their reactions, their feelings, and their expressions. And so therefore, the trials that humanity has, there are external trials that come upon us, but the actual trial is what we experience in the face of that eventuality. It's not the thing that comes upon us. If we lose a leg in Vietnam, one man can lose a leg in Vietnam and he can be bitter and shriveled and inactive and the rest of his life. The other fellow can grow with it and can become very contribute a great deal to society and so on. It all depends upon how he deals, how he reacts to his misfortune or whatever his condition is. And this is what we mean when we talk about trials. The trial is not having your leg blown off. That's an accident of life. The trial is how do you deal with it. And the way you deal with it, and we bring, those are the trials that we bring upon ourselves. God doesn't bring them to us. God doesn't blow our leg off either. This is part of the whole field of activity and action. So the human soul then, what it brings with itself from incarnation to incarnation is not necessarily memories, but certain kinds of a nectar that can bring back a memory-like thing in certain conditions. And it doesn't bring with itself certain aptitudes and talents. If you were a great mathematician in one incarnation, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great mathematician in another incarnation or in another monadic incarnation, but rather that which you achieve spiritually through the trials that you yourself undergo, that's what you bring with you. And that is what solidifies and unifies and gives integrity to the soul, because the soul is a panoply of billions of psychic lives, all being held together now in a grand solar system. And the harmony that holds that self, that psychic life together, the integrity that it has, is developed through life in flesh and through the way that life is dealt with in flesh. And those that develop great harmony and great stability and great unity in the soul and integrity in the soul are those who are able, whose souls will grow. And they take on, so to speak, greater, they become greater beings. And so the monad can accommodate now in one soul, not just the equivalent of one incarnation, but in one soul, the equivalent of two incarnations, so to speak, two soul stuffs. If there were two beings that were incarnate, then there is a sense in which, but it's, we can't think of them really as physical things, but the energy of these two souls can make up the energy of another soul that can be incarnated as one individual. And so the human soul is something that is in the process of growth. Now, it's compared in an Eastern allegories to the blossoming forth of the lotus. In its different stages, it starts from the seed. It goes up through the mud and the water, and then it floats upon the top of the water. And at that point, it develops a bud. It's inseminated. It's germinated. I'm not germinated, but inseminated. And then it develops what the fruit or flower of a plant is, which is like a sex organ, basically. And then it opens up all of its petals and so on. And that all at all those stages are different stages of the human soul. In the alchemical traditions, the human soul is compared to a chalice. And it is said that in the final stages, just as in the final stages of psychic development in the human kingdom, that the petals of the flower fall away, and what is left, what is revealed, is the center, which becomes the fruit. It's the ripened ovary, like the fruit, like an apple or something like that. Then that is what is called, is compared to the higher self. When the petals fall away, but the opening of all the petals and how they open, and this all refers to different stages. The same thing with the chalice, the alchemist chalice, that in the final stages, the tears of the chalice, the different layers of the chalice are burned away until finally what is left is the stone, the philosopher's stone, which is created in the center. And that is the final and perfect manifestation of the human soul. And to go back then to another track, the human souls are like plants in a garden that are overseen by gardeners. And when these plants become big enough and special enough, then each plant is overseen by a gardener, one gardener for each plant. And this, the term for this gardener is referred to in my tradition as the solar angel, the guardian angel. The Master Jesus spoke of the angel. Each person has an angel that watches over him, and that's an old tradition, but it is in fact true that each human soul has a attending or guarding or nurturing angelic being or intelligence that is not the soul, but that goes with the soul like a mother goes with a child. And when the soul finally gets to the point that the higher nature is all connected and all extended, and that we can, and that the soul is truly under the guidance of what it has finally filled out and created, and from potential, it has finally filled it out and created in reality, which we call the higher ego, the higher self, then the solar angel no longer needs to be there, because the higher guidance comes from the higher self, and the, so to speak, the petals of the soul fall away. They've been used, and this final development has happened. And so the goal of the development of the human soul is to become what we might call divine. It's to develop into gods. And the ultimate development of the human being and the human soul All individual monadic expressions belong to of this planet, belong to an even greater family, and that is represented by the archetype that in Christianity is called the Christ, or the new Adam. And all human beings are Adam. All men are Adam, all women are Eve, so to speak. And Adam and Eve ultimately are one being, one hermaphroditic being. And that one thing that all humanity is an even higher form, but it's not a human form anymore. It's a very different kind of form. It's what is called in some traditions a planetary logos, and there are other things like this. But the goal of human psychic development is to become more than human, and to become expanded, and to become part of and actively involved in the nurture and raising of other souls. In the Hermetic Initiation Tractate that I translated from my doctoral dissertation, the son, as he's called, there are two people, a father and a son. The son is the one who's being born, achieving the final initiation in the Hermetic ritual, or the Hermetic teaching. He started out as one member of a large group of people. A Hermetic preacher was preaching on the sidewalk, and after he preached what he had to say, half the people spat at him and walked away. The other people, some of them came up and grabbed him and begged for more teaching. And then he was brought into another circle where there might have been 12 or 10 people, and then they were given all kinds of instruction and went for many years. And then he was brought into a much smaller group of maybe one or two people, and he was given more instruction. And finally, at the end, he was brought into a one-to-one relationship with the pneumatic teacher, the tat, the thought, the father. And he was taken through the Hermetic initiation of rebirth, which involved being able to be finally free of all the seven planetary spheres of the of matter that hold the human soul into incarnate existence and cause it to recycle and recycle in incarnation. And when he is brought up through the seven spheres into the zodiacal sphere, which is called the eighth or the Ogdoad, there he sees his brothers, so to speak. They're both masculine and feminine. His brothers who have ascended, who live in the Ogdoad and are continually part of the great orchestra, and music of the universe. And their job is to increase and augment and nurture other souls that are coming along. Just as we grow up, we become parents and we have children and we raise those children up and they become parents, so it is the human soul that we are raised and we are under guidance and protection by angelic beings, by a specific one, and by certain guides and so on, and by a specific highest guide, so to speak. And at a certain point, that guidance is something we're each able to be capable of ourselves. We become adult and mature as souls. And at that point, the guidance leaves us because it doesn't need to be there, because we can take care of ourselves, so to speak. But it's always there and available. And we ourselves then start assuming the position of being guides and helps and helpers and nurturers. And that can be in physical life, that can be in other kinds of life. Now, when you see people who are helping other people and are in a position where what they do is truly helpful, not just an illusory helpfulness or just a conventional helpfulness, but where these people, what they do actually truly benefits people on a deep, deep kind of spiritual level, then you see people who are operating out of that. And all the great teachers of humanity have been people like this. And many of these people are people that don't have a lot of contact with people. They're loners. They're alone. They're separate. But they do a lot of their work in without even knowing it at first, in unconscious worlds and in dream and sleep type worlds where they're first introduced to this kind of work. So the human soul is this long, long development that eventually leads to a position where the being does not have need of further experience, incarnational experience, but has a choice and makes a choice to either remain with this world, with this whole thing, or to go on into other kinds of worlds where there's other kinds of work and so on. But this is the goal of human spiritual evolution, is to become adult spiritually. In Christian theology, they say to become co-creators with God, to become stewards. Jesus, when he's asked, what will happen to us? He says to his apostles say to him, what will happen to us? What's our reward? Or something like that, some kind of insipid thing like that. And he tells stories of the master who leaves, who goes away, and he leaves the whole plantation, the whole estate in charge of his servants. And some of the servants quarrel, and some of the servants do a good job. And then when he comes back, he rewards them. And the ones that did a good job, he makes them rulers over a kingdom. He says, here, take this kingdom. Here, you have to be a ruler over five kingdoms. You do this. Great, incredible rewards. But for those that don't do it, he says, here, get out. You're not doing the job right, you know. Or another allegorical teachings that he gives about this sort of thing, he indicates that the destiny of one who has achieved the resurrected state, so to speak, is to become like the angels, so to speak, to become no longer male or female, and you're no longer polarized into masculine, feminine, male, and female, because every soul contains all those both those polarities. At the level of soul, we're hermaphroditic. We're not masculine, not feminine, so it is a male soul or a female soul. And when that finally is achieved, so that continuity of consciousness is achieved, and that one is awake on all levels, and one dies, one remains awake, one doesn't dream, one doesn't do this, then one is a mature being who is already knowing what he does and is part of the work of the universe and is part of the divine work of creation and of the nurture of souls, the cure of souls, as it's called. And so this is where one steps into. And Mother Jenny used to say, what is the reward of service? More service, greater service, expanded service. And there is nothing more that can give one greater satisfaction than to be able to be capable of more and to do more and to serve more, and to serve greater, and to serve in a more significant way. That is the greatest reward there is in psychic life, to be more expanded and so on. It's not a matter of gaining more power for oneself. It's a matter of the joy of expanded understanding and activity and growth, and the joy of growing and coming into greater, more expanded states of activity and existence. This is the destiny of the human soul. So it doesn't happen all that fast. Some souls make a lot of progress and then they regress and make more progress and regress. Some souls don't seem to be doing anything and all of a sudden they make a tremendous progress. And you just can't tell where anybody is by looking at any person, what step that person stands on in spiritual life or psychic life. You can't tell. There are some general kinds of things that might be true, but it's just not worth making any judgments because you're just not going to be right most of the time. The other thing I'll say is that in a human life, in a human lifetime, if we look at the experience of birth until death in his fetus, recapitulates, as I say, the ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, as Freud said, that the human fetus first resembles sort of a fish, then sort of an amphibian, then sort of a reptile, and if certain processes are arrested by thalidomide or drugs like that, and kids born with flippers or has other kinds of things that go on and so on, there is actually a sense in which the same thing happens in the soul, in that as one grows into spiritual, full spiritual adulthood, which is really about age 28, that one goes through a process of recapitulating where one has been before, because one has to reach out and retouch bases, reignite all those initiations one has had before, rekindle that which is already there. All the buttons have to be pushed again, and all those things have to be turned on again before the person can have all that he is functioning, before all the dimensions of psychic life are turned on again. And to get to that point can be very dangerous. A lot of people die before that point. A lot of people get themselves stuck in certain things, karmic things, or people commit suicide, teenage suicide, or people get themselves into some kind of a rut or some kind of a situation before they get to that age that damages them. They get into psychedelic drugs, and they get into too many of different kinds of psychedelic drugs, and then when the time comes that they have all the understanding and they want to do the kinds of spiritual work and meditations, they find that they have damaged themselves severely for that kind of work. And it's a pity. I've run into a lot of people who have, I did psychedelic drugs when I was a kid and all that kind of stuff too, but fortunately I didn't damage myself beyond all redemption, but for this incarnation. But some people do. Some people completely do in their etheric webs and do all kinds of things. And so, assuming we get to age 28 without doing something negative things to our physical vehicle and our subtle structures, we are then prepared to undertake very serious esoteric work that doesn't just bring us current up to where we are, but takes us beyond where we are, based upon what we have done. At the younger ages, 18, 19, 20, the physical body does not represent in any way the soul. You can have a somebody with a very beautiful angelic face at age 18 who is a ravening she-devil inside. And you can have a very ugly looking person at age 18 who is a saint inside. But by the time you get to age 42, 43, 44, those kinds of ages, that which is within the soul has so much permeated the physical body that you start to be able to see in people's faces much of what their interior is all about. And as people get much older and get into their 50s, you can see in their faces the beauty of the soul, the contractedness of the soul, the ignorance that comes out on the face. And these old medieval skills of physiognomic skills that would say, well, people have this kind of nose or this and that, of course, is all baloney. But what is not baloney is that a sensitive person can look into the face of an older person and can read that person much more easily than he or she can a younger person. A younger person is really in masquerade, and an older person starts to show. And the way it's expressed in the Agni Yoga teachings is, by age 42, the interior fire of a person begins to etch itself on the features, and you begin to see, what really is there. So that is a part of the history of the human soul that I will mention and stress, that very often the people who live to be quite old, we have this very interesting contrast between old people. You get to know some really old people, and those that are contracted, that are closed, that are creatures of dust and habit, and whose minds are just deep rut channels of certain things, and who are crystallized in their views and their ideas and what they can accept, and are extremely conservative in all their ways and so on, are those who are the walking dead. And then there are every once in a while meet an old person, someone in their 70s or 80s or even 90s, who is so much more alive than most people who are 20, and who can, whose energy can just ignite you. And a person like that was my teacher, Mother Jenny, who passed out of her body at the age of 97, and I met her when she was 91. And there was a woman who was just a remarkable human being, and whose light extended into all corners of any area that she was in, and whose love and whose sensitivity were heroic, and whose capabilities and whose soul was so great, and whose aura was so great. The other thing I should mention is that as the soul expands, so to speak, as the growth of the soul becomes greater and greater, the influence, the auric influence of that person expands farther and farther out. So if you were able to look at the auras of some people, they would be about this wide, other people would be about this wide, and so on. There are, speaking of those subtle structures, the aura, as has been mentioned in the psychic literature and all this kind of stuff, is a real thing, and it exists, but there are also other structures. One is the wings, coming out from the neck in this area. After a certain kind of development, develop what have been called the wings, which are can be felt and sensed as their throat energy that goes out in all directions. And these are people who are able to do things in the physical world that are verge on the form of mastery. They have control over elementals and things like that. There is also another thing that's called the crown, which some people, which has been depicted as a halo, but it's called the crown. And this is a strong concentration of energy around the top of the head that also is of a different nature than the aura. And that is the, it is, and in more advanced people, when they die and they pass out of the body, they pass out through the crown. Other people pass out through other parts of the body. When people have this, this energy here, it's not in any way possible for them to be obsessed or possessed or in any way taken over by any force external to their own souls.